Welcome to the Education Marketing Leader Podcast with Chris Raposo. If you're looking to dive into the latest industry insights, draw inspiration from education success stories, or just want to sharpen your marketing skills, you're in the right place. Here, we bring you a diverse range of voices from experts and leaders in the field, offering you a unique blend of professional development and practical strategies. Whether you want to understand your audience better, stay updated with the latest tech trends in marketing, or expand your professional network, we've got you covered. So while you're driving on your morning commute or winding down after a busy day, let's explore the dynamic world of education marketing together.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Education Marketing Leader with Chris Raposo. Today, my guest is joining me from the Bluegrass State. Her name is Laura Rudolph. She's the founder of Square One Consulting, CMO at Be Light Care Consulting, and she is a former university marketer at Transylvania University and Marshall University. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris.
It's great to have you here. So we talked to Laura a little bit about the about her passions in the pre-interview. And one thing that really stood out to me was her passion for marketing and communicating with overlooked audiences, such as parents and counselors, when they decide where to go to school. So Laura, you've worn many hats in your career on campus at a university, as well as with your consulting. What initially drew you to focus so deeply on parent and counselor engagement, and why do you think these groups are often overlooked?
Yeah, I think anyone in higher education long enough sees that parents and counselors are, they're always peripherally in the picture, but rarely are they the primary strategy. Mm. And so what really drew me in was just noticing that while leadership and marketing teams were really working hard on the student outreach perspective, there were these two critical audiences I felt that were kind of being treated like secondary players, and that's the parents and the high school counselors. And it's not because, you know, we didn't care, I think. It's not that admissions teams don't recognize that those are very important audiences. It's just that if you're a small team and you're having to prioritize, you're going to prioritize the student experience. One of the things that I see, and I tell a lot of my clients this, is that, you know, parents aren't just along for the ride, they're driving the car. And the counselors are then, they're kind of the GPS that are checking in on the students when they get lost. And those are two really critical pieces. And they are influencing a student's journey behind the scenes at a very high level. So ignoring them doesn't really reduce their impact in any way. It just means that you're really missing out on an opportunity to engage somebody. And I saw this gap at many institutions. The good news is it's not necessarily about adding more work. It's about helping institutions kind of recraft some of the communication they already have and mm-hmm. communicating smarter with the people who are already driving that process.
I love that analogy. The parents are driving a car. They're literally driving the car because they're driving the kids. Yeah. They're driving the kids to campus, you know, for those visits. And then I love the counselors, the GPS, because those mm-hmm. are the trusted advisors while mm-hmm. they're in high school, right, or wherever. So definitely want to include them as well. And I think if you have an issue with some of these counselors, that leave a bad taste in their mouth, which then they will choose another institution over yours just because of the interaction with the particular person that they interacted with at the university. But let's talk about that. Common missteps that institutions make when trying to connect with parents during the college search process. What have you seen?
I think there's a few. The first to me, I think, is that we just overcomplicate it a little bit. And one of the things I hear a lot is, you know, why don't you have a parent communication strategy? The answer is often, well, we would engage parents, but, you know, we don't get their contact information until they submit their application. And my response is, been collected earlier. I mean, it's really not a difficult step to take. You know, if you have a great CRM, if you're a Slate school, you know, add a parent field to your inquiry forms, add it to your events, add it to your applications. you know, make sure that it exists everywhere that you would expect a student to submit information. And the great news is that students are willing to give you that information if you just ask. And there's research everywhere that backs this up. In particular, I can remember some from Mongoose that said they found that participation jumps when you just explain why you want to engage the parent. So you just say, hey, we would love your parents' email because we want to send them information you might not be interested in. Information about financial aid, payment plans, and students are willing to then provide that information to you. So I think another misstep is assuming that parents are going to need glossy marketing. They're going to need a lot of effort. They need constant updates. But the thing is, they really don't. Parents are just looking for clarity. They just want transparency. And I think sometimes we complicate this too much in our brains about what we're going to need to fulfill a communication plan for them. Really, the parents care about a couple of things. They care, how much is it going to cost? What are the career outcomes for the major my student's interested in? Is my student going to be safe? Are they going to have support services? And if your communication isn't answering these questions, then you're just missing out. The good thing is that there's a very easy solutions for this. And a lot of these conversations and a lot of this messaging already exists somewhere. We're just needing to repurpose it for this audience. So it's not necessarily a significant additional lift. And it's just going from being reactive to proactive. Because by the time you admit a student, you know, it's too late to start building trust with that parent. They already have an idea of what your institution is like and have a perception of it.
Absolutely. That just brings me to a couple of things. First of all, students are willing to give the information if you give them a reason, if give them a reason, right? You've probably heard of the study that if you give somebody a reason for wanting something, they're more likely to give you that information instead of just saying, hey, can I get your parents' email address? And they're like, why? But if you say, hey, because I want to send them more information, it's like that story. There was a case study done, you may have heard of it, where somebody, there's a line at the copy machine. And if somebody stands behind them and they say, hey, can I make some copies? But they want to cut the line, they're probably going to get pushback. But if they say, hey, can I make some copies because of this important meeting coming up? A certain amount of people were willing to let that person jump ahead of them. And then they did the case study again. And they said, simply the word because and given a reason to do a particular act, they said, this person went to that to the line of the or to that person who made copies and they said, can I make copies of this document just because I have to make a copy of this document? Just simple explanation, right? Obviously, you have to make a copy of it, but they would let that person ahead because they gave the explanation as to why they wanted a particular thing. And then the other thing, what you said is that the parents want the reassurance, right? As a parent myself, I want to make sure that my kids are safe. I want to make sure what am I signing up for? And then is my kid going to be ready to be launched? Because the last thing I want is have tuition debt and then my little guy coming back into my house, right? When I was ready to be an empty nester. And another, one more thing I heard in the past was with Gen Zers, especially, a lot of them don't look at their emails, but the parents will. And the parents will remind them about important deadlines and they will help them down the nurture path, right? To make sure, hey, this deadline is coming up. Did you submit all your documents? So it is just another sense of accountability there, not just the student who may miss an email or two, but also the stakeholder has a lot of stake at it as well. But let's talk about your experience consulting university and colleges. What does it look like when a university really gets the parent engagement right?
Yeah, a great question. I think number one, it's being proactive, right? And prioritizing them as a key audience in your communication. A great way to do that is creating your own surveys. This is something I will die on a hill on because I think that there's great information and great data out there, right? We see higher education companies that come out with great white papers that give us some really strong information that we can utilize to develop our communication flows. In my experience, I've worked at a lot of very small private liberal arts colleges, regional colleges, where maybe 70, 80, even upwards of 90% of your students are within 90-mile radius, 120-mile radius of your campus. And they might just think a little bit differently than some of these, the national data might show. So I'm very strongly believe that you need to have some be doing some primary research of your own. And we have always done that at my past institution through surveys. I survey students, but I survey the parents. And I will survey the parents that matriculated, their students matriculated, and the ones that did not matriculate. And we adjust those questions accordingly. We ask questions not only about the content of the information, but the delivery method of that information. We also ask about frequency. How often do you want this? And then just, some general questions about were there any gaps in messaging? Were there things that you would prefer to have had that you didn't see? And I think that when you're really proactive like that, that's definitely going to give you insights that you're not going to have and other institutions are not going to have about themselves. From the communication side, I think you're doing it right when the communication you're writing feels more like you're in partnership rather than you're pitching to them. One campaign, and you alluded to this a moment ago, that just came to mind is at an institution we did a parent text reminder system. And there were some people who were hesitant because there is a tradition in higher education that the student should drive the search process. And that is kind of how I was taught when I first came in 17, 18 years ago. And I completely respect that. I agree. We want those students to take initiative and be the person who's driving that college search process. But then there's reality, right? And the reality is that there's parents who are helping them get to where they need to go. And so what we did is we chose that at critical junctures of the admissions process, wherein oftentimes when we saw hurdles on the student side, we're going to focus on sending timely text nudges to the parent. And we're going to use them to be that driver to get those students over those hurdles that we're seeing in the application process. So we sent text nudges before FAFSA deadlines. We sent it before, obviously, deposit dates. A huge one for us was enrollment forms. So when we got to the point where, there's 10 or 12 forms that a student needs to fill out to be able to fully enroll, we would text the parent when it was 5 days before the deadline. And it would be something very, very informal. And it would say, hi, heads up, the enrollment form for this is due in 5 days. Your student hasn't completed it yet. We just thought you would want to know and help them get over that hurdle. Here's the link. Parents loved it because it reduced stress on their part. A big amount of the anxiety and stress that we saw in our surveys was they wanted to support their student, but they didn't want to hover. And I think that's an important thing to think about. And the thing is that it worked. We saw higher completion rates on our enrollment steps. And here's the thing, it was not a massive overhaul. It was really low lift, but it was very high impact. And those are the strategies that, enrollment teams of any size are really capable of executing when they're empowered to do so or when they have the time to be proactive and think about it. Because those, well-timed texts can really be the difference between a student missing a deadline and a student enrolling and depositing.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for tuning into the show today. I hope you enjoyed so far. Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast, but were just overwhelmed by the sheer amount of work that goes into it? I get it. After producing over 100 episodes for the Education Marketing Leader, there's a lot of time that goes into this, time that most of us simply don't have. And that's where the Education Marketing Leader podcast production service comes into play. Me and my team will take care of the heavy lifting from scripting, strategy, editing to promoting. All you have to do is show up, record your episode, share your expertise, connect with your audience, and build your personal brand. So if you've been sitting on a podcast idea, today is the time to act. Reach out to me via DM on LinkedIn, and we'll get you started. And now, back to the episode. 100%. Those texts are very important. And it's a timeliness as well, right? If it's too early, then it's like it's forgotten. If it's too late, you're stressing them out even more during that process. I'm talking about the texting because You started up. I saw that you were at Transylvania and then Marshall. But so your time on campus was about 10 years. So let's say 10 years ago, things might have been a little bit different, right? When you marketed to potentially boomers or Gen X or parents. Now you're coming into millennial parents, right? How does the generational shift in parenting change the tone, channel, and timing of outreach? You already alluded to it that it was texting now, right? It may have not landed well 10 years ago.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm at kind of my third generation of parents since I've been in education, but I'm at my most fun group generation of parents, I think, when it comes to content development. It's a really interesting crossroads in higher ed that we're at because, like you said, in those early years that I was in education, so around the 2008 to like 2012, 2014, we still had a lot of boomers. We were using more formal language. One thing that boomers really loved were kind of the high-end, fancy, special things on our campus. So I remember writing about our Tempur-Pedic beds and rock walls, and there was really like extra special things that made us stand out on our campus. And then came the Gen X parents, and they were very skeptical of anything that we had to say. They were very pragmatic. They very financially cautious, much more than the boomer generation. And it was at that point where in my career, I thought, these generations are different enough. We need to scrap what we had for these parents and we need to start over because they're just a different group of people. Millennials are now kind of coming in. I'm a millennial parent myself, and what's interesting is that they're not too far off, I think, from the Gen Xers in the way that they think. The biggest difference, I think, with the millennial parent is that it's the one group of generational people that, for the first time, are digital natives. And we really haven't had fully digital native parents until the millennial population. And so, I grew up not having a computer. And then I remember the days of having the computer and the internet. And I didn't have a cell phone until I was probably 17 years old. And so, but now I'm just completely ingrained and it is part of my life and it's part of my life as a parent. And I am a Google searcher, and that's what this generation of parents are too, right? We're going to Google everything. We may now even chat GPT everything, right? And so it's just a very different group of people. And so this group just has a little bit more expectation of instant information. And they value authenticity over the polish that I think those boomers expected. And on top of that, now we're generating with their Gen Z kids, and they're very independent. They're kind of allergic to anything that feels like traditional marketing. And they're just a very different group of students. So I think when it comes to millennial parents, there's just some things that are going to be more important to them. But what's really universal is clarity, transparency, and timely information. And you just have, I don't think that's ever going to change from this point forward with parents. It's not really about chasing trends with them. It's just respecting how they communicate as a family and they make decisions together, kind of moving forward and making sure that you're supporting them emotionally as a family a little bit more. And making sure that they feel like they're making the best decision for their students.
Yeah, absolutely. And you speak the language, millennials, right? Because you're part of that audience, and so it makes it more fun to communicate with them, and you know what triggers them and what doesn't. And I'm a millennial too, but I'm like one of the first ones. Like I think 82, they say it starts. I'm 83, so I'm on the older side. But yeah, I remember that having that first cell phone when I was 18 years old, and I was kind of embarrassed. I was like, oh, this is crazy. I don't want to show that off because it's so unnatural to carry around a phone as a 17-year-old, and nobody carried around phones, only very important
Well,
business
and we
people.
had phones, but we only called with them. Like
That's
texting was not a
right.
thing for a
That's right.
long time. And I remember in the early stages of my career when there was a lot of conversation about should we text students? Should we text, forget texting parents? Should we even text students because they feel like that is a very personal experience. And like, do we really want to be in that realm of having those conversations? And now it's
Right.
an expectation of life
Yep.
with brands, not just higher education. So that has changed significantly too over the years.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I noticed that during Giving Day, I went to the University of Florida, and during Giving Day, I got all these emails. I got these flyers. I didn't act on it, but I was walking around outside, and while I was in Tampa visiting, I got a text from UF say, "Hey, can you spare $20 to get a T-shirt?" I was like, "Oh, what the heck?" You know, click the link, give the $20, you're done with it. Very fast. Got my T-shirt. But I would have never acted on it when it's a mail piece or an email, right? So texting, very, very powerful. Let's talk supporting counselors a little bit. You mentioned that most schools are missing the mark there. What are they getting wrong in terms of messaging or delivery?
I don't think it's about effort. Again, I think a lot of, especially admissions counselors who are the boots on the ground, I think they know that those counselors are really important to them in developing their territories. But I think a lot at the marketing level, we sometimes treat counselors as just a mailing list, right? And it's like, oh, let's just send counselors a newsletter this month with information. And I think that worked for a while. I actually remember in my early days, we had a monthly counselor newsletter. And at some point, one of the leadership individuals came to me and said, "Hey, we're going to stop doing it because we've had counselors saying that it feels like we're spamming their inbox." And I think that was kind of, they're like, "Well, we don't know what else to do. So we just won't communicate with them like that at all if we can't do a newsletter." But I think that CRMs and it have obviously advanced a lot. And I think that personalization is just so expected now that we need to start having the same expectation that we do for counselors as we do for the students and the parents. And, you know, I'm all about being proactive, and I've talked about surveys for students and counselors. But at my last institution, the last 2 years, we decided we're going to survey counselors as well.
Nice.
And I can't tell you how many emails we have responding, thanking us for asking for their input. And I think that that really told me that that is not something that's done frequently, that we're not necessarily asking what they want and when they want it and how they want it delivered. And there was just a really healthy thank you from a lot of them for respecting that that's something that we needed to do. And from that survey, I think we had some really great results. And there was very clear feedback, which is also great because when you have very clear feedback, it's very easy to make changes. The one thing was, please be transparent and just skip the marketing fluff, right? That's, they just wanted the information. A lot of these counselors have been in higher education before, you know, they know the drill, they know what to expect, and they just really want straight information. They want to know what is missing long before the deadline hits and who is missing it specifically at their school, you know?
Yes.
And so we started implementing emails. We used some pretty in-depth segmentation in our system. We were a slate school and we provided an email, "Hi, counselor name. This is your high school. Here are all your students that are incomplete applicants. Here are your students who have completed their application, but have not yet been admitted. So if they ask you any questions, we're still in the process of reviewing their applications. Here are the students who have been admitted and we don't have a deposit for yet. And here are the students who have been deposited." And we would send
Nice.
those different emails throughout the year. They loved those. The ones that they loved the most were when we would tell them, "Here are the students missing transcripts." And they would respond and be like, I just sent all five of them to you, right?
Nice.
And because it gives them something to act upon and they can do it and they can check it off their list. And they're not having to search for that. You know, I think sometimes schools, we just overthink these kinds of things. They're not asking for the world. They're just asking for really simple, clear communication. And the thing is that they have high caseloads. You know, they have very limited resources. They have multiple roles, especially when you're talking at public schools. They might have, right, 400 students that they're responsible for. They're also registrars. They're registering these for students for classes. Sometimes they're also the mental health counselors that students are having to come to. And so they're just juggling so much that it's more than college advising. And if your communication isn't designed to save them time, then it's probably going to get ignored. And it's not because they don't care. They care so much. Yeah. It's just they don't have the time to afford that extra effort to get to yeah. where you need them to get to.
It's a lot. It's a lot. If you lighten the load a little bit, or you know, alleviate the friction, they love you for it. Like you could tell when they send you the email, and also make them feel seen. Right? It's kind of like the Maslow's hierarchy of needs: self-actualization, esteem, love and belonging, safety and needs, psychological needs, and there the esteem, yeah. the self-respect. Right? Everybody wants to be respected. Everybody wants to be seen, and if they see that coming from you, they will be reciprocated, and then you know you'll get the benefits from that as well. Now, a little bit of research on you. When I planned this episode, you mentioned something about the psych framework. Can you walk yeah. us through one of the psychological insights that shifted how you approach counselor communication?
Yeah, absolutely. And I promise this isn't theory for theory's sake. I think there's a lot of great principles out there that can just teach us a lot about how humans work. And ways to build relationships with people. And one framework that really changed how I approach counselor communication is called social exchange theory. And it's pretty simple. It's, you know, people engage in relationships, whether they're personal or they're professional, when the benefits outweigh the cost. So I started looking at every touch point with counselors through that social exchange theory lens. So is this email providing value, or is it just adding to the clutter? Are we making it easy for counselors to get what they need, or are they having to jump through more hurdles? Are we being transparent enough to build trust with them, or are we kind of putting up some marketing language here to make it sound better than what it really is? And once you start to see it that way, I think you are able to shift your communication in a way where it's not checking a box. It's how can we maximize value and minimize effort for the counselor? So instead of sending a very generic update, build a personal status, you know, student status report of where their students are, what they're missing, and where they're at. Clear benefit saves them time, right? They're not having to go somewhere to find that information. Another piece is reciprocity. You know, counselors are more likely to engage with us and advocate for our school when, and, you know, respond when we need help. And so being able to provide them with that information makes them better advocates for you as an institution. And they're more likely to talk to students about your institution when they know that you're doing what you can to make their lives easier, because the way that you're treated as a counselor, the way you're treated on your campus is how you can expect to be treated when you are a student.
That's right. That's absolutely right. I love that reciprocity. Now we talked about there's a lot of work to do. Counselors have their plates full, but so do university marketers. People are moving around, positions aren't backfilled. Do you see opportunities for schools to create like an overlapping strategy that serves both parents and counselors, or do they require fundamentally different approaches?
Honestly, I think there's a lot of simple things that schools can do that counselors and parents consistently tell us that they really appreciate. And I don't think, you know, the good thing, none of them require a big budget. Most of them do not require a massive overhaul. And so I think there's a few really low effort, high impact tweaks that you can, are given to us straight from the mouths of counselors and parents that you can kind of create. For counselors and specifically, when we asked them, in what way do you want information communicated to you? 75% of those counselors preferred having a dedicated webpage where they can just bookmark, they can get there, they can find the deadlines, application requirements, scholarship information, contact details. And I realize it sounds very basic, but you would be surprised how many schools really bury this information in different departments or different pages. So just giving a counselor kind of a one-stop shop, you can really reduce their workload. If you are a Slate school, slate.org is a great opportunity for you to use. And over 70% of counselors in our survey said that they would actively use it if we provided meaningful information there. Now, with that being said, we had slate.org, but we also still provided them those emails with their students' names, because we know it does not hurt to put information in multiple places for them. You know, I think automating emails, you know, they don't want weekly newsletters. They just want things when it's really important. So maybe it's a monthly or deadline-based email that says, here's what's coming up. Here's something that's changed. Here's how we can help you and what we're focusing on this month. And it can be by territory. It can be by school. And I think that that's usually pretty easy, because it's information you already know as a counselor. It's not a heavy lift. Also don't have to write it in a very professional way. We need to see we need to see counselors as our colleagues and as our collaborators. And if we see them in that way, communicating them just very clearly is all you need to do. I think that that's really an easy thing to do. I think a third thing that's incredibly beneficial is taking content for that you've already pre-written for students and just adjusting it for a parent is going to help answer some of the questions parents already have. For example, at my last institution, we were located in a downtown city, and so we had safety concerns from both the parent and student side. We had a great student email. All we did was we took that information, we kind of tweaked it and crafted it for the parent, and we used it for both. It was not a heavy lift. It already pre-exists, and I think the more frequently you can use content in multiple places, it's going to be an easier lift on you as a counselor, as a marketing team. So those are kind of some of the things that I think are pretty easy lifts for institutions to kind of start the path of communication for these audiences.
Especially the web pages, you know, you have them there, you can up them frequently, and it just have people go on there whenever they're available to go there. Now, my question is this, you said that sometimes these pages are buried. Where would you suggest people would house those pages for the counselors to be easily found?
From my experience, the counselors expect it to be in admissions.
That's what
regardless of whether it's financial aid information, regardless of whether it's financial aid information or it's information about resources for scholarships or whatever it might be, you can link to those individual areas of your website from a counselor landing page. But for the most part, I think the expectation is I am part of the admissions process as a high school counselor. So I am going to go to the admissions page to find that information. Another piece that was highly recommended by counselors was what we called a one pager, a one page printed sheet of information. They actually preferred it digitally. That's a back and front of just everything they need to know as a counselor. And it doesn't have to be pretty, right? We're not handing these things out to prospective students. It's not a marketing piece. It's an informational piece. And we developed one of those in an institution I was at, and then we just updated it from year to year. Counselors loved it. They were able to put it into systems that they had themselves, so that way multiple counselors had access to that digital information. And then we're also not having to dig for it on a regular basis.
Makes a lot of sense. One pagers are, you know, something that I used all the time to communicate the value of a particular product that we have, right? So easy use, easy to update as well if you need to. As we wrap up the episode, let's say there's a university marketer listening in here who hasn't prioritized their audience before. So that audience before, what's one first step they can take in the upcoming month to start building meaningful connections with parents or counselors?
This is the best time of year to listen. I think listening is the best thing you can do at the end of a cycle, because you can quickly send out a survey, and this does not have to be extensive for counselors. Send them a 5-question survey. Ask them what communication helps them the most, when they want it, and what information they need. And that's can be a great piece of information for you to go into the fall to create whatever you need to do to make it a really great experience for them in the next cycle. For parents, again, I also think listening, I think you should have a parent survey over the summer. But if you are thinking that you want to do something immediately for parents who might be of those admitted or deposited students, I would say over the summer, why not create a couple of emails that are like Q&As covering cost, covering when your bill is going to come, covering any of these little pieces of information that they may need to know in the coming months to make sure that their student makes it from May to August or September and actually make it on campus. I think answering, you know, the great thing is that we have emails, I'm sure, that have been saved from years. Go to your counseling team, get all your counselors together and say, hey, what kind of questions have we been having from parents lately? And create a 5 email series just like that, answering those very simple questions. And I think that's a really great place to start.
Yeah, I think so too. That's great insight. Thank you so much for that, Laura. So how can people connect with you to continue the conversation? And also tell us a little bit more about Square One Consulting and Be the Light Consulting.
Yeah. So at Square One Consulting, it's my primary consulting business. I focus, I say, from strategy to slate. So I can help with enrollment marketing solutions all across the timeline. I try to help institutions kind of cut through some of the noise and some of the content that may have been written, you know, many moons ago, and updating it for our audiences, making sure it's really student driven and empathy focused, and also building sustainable communication strategies, and especially for overlooked audiences like parents and counselors. I'm really like to focus on pouring into small schools, regional schools. Maybe your small staff cannot handle it. I like to go in, kind of help set you up. I like to joke that we try to start you from square one and then we'll build you up. And then I like to hand it over and pour into your people and get you on the road to where you no longer need a consultant. You know, I hope you don't need me for the long term. I want to make sure that I can set you up to be successful for the long term. So whether it's, you know, smarter late delivery usage, or it's about creating really great communication to your audiences, I'm here to help teams, you know, feel more confident and capable. So you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I love to post thoughts and communicate with everyone, all the colleagues of mine in higher ed on LinkedIn. And you can also find me on my website, which is square1ky.com. And you can read a little bit more about my services there. And I have an insights blog where I just kind of post musings about higher education.
Awesome. Laura, I'll be sure to tag you in the recap and share the website as well in the show notes. So Laura, really appreciate you being part of the show. I thought that was very insightful, and I'm sure it's going to help a lot of people.
Thanks so much, Chris. Great to be here.
You bet. Take care. And that's a wrap for this episode, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to Education Marketing Leader Podcast this week. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to share it with your friends and your network. And if you ever thought about starting your own podcast, now that you listen to one and you got inspired, reach out to me via DM. We'd love to help you launch your own. We'll take care of everything for you, the scripting, the strategy, the editing, the distribution. All you have to do is show up, connect with your audience, and build your personal brand. So if you're ready for it, let's chat. And for everybody else, we'll see you next time at the Education Marketing Leader Podcast. Take care, friends.